Well, it can be certainly stressful when something needs to be fixed at home and you don't have the time or maybe the money to take care of it. But sometimes letting it go can end up costing you a whole lot more money in the long run. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Lucky to have two pros who know a lot and have a good time sharing their experiences as well. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison with us. Ken, great to have you back.
It's always good to see you.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg is his partner for these programs. Always a pleasure, John.
Great to be back.
I really love to have you back. And we'll zero in a little bit on the importance of masonry and stonework today. But, of course, we'll answer your questions when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You could even post a photo. If you've got a photo of some little issue in your house and you want to post it, we'll be glad to take a look at it. But zeroing in a little bit on masonry, when we talk about masonry, what are we really referring to exactly?
Well, maybe a little history lesson is the easiest way to approach it, Larry, because it's complicated.
Yeah.
Everybody's seen pictures of the Colosseum in Rome and castles and medieval cathedrals and maybe a big warehouse in their hometown, or maybe a basement wall in a farmhouse. They are solid masonry. They are wide, and they support big loads. That's called a mass wall. Mm-hmm. There's just a big mass of masonry, and it's nothing but masonry. If you go to Old World, Wisconsin, you see that beautiful German barn there. It's an example of another type of masonry that is seen usually where ethnic groups settled, and that's half timbering. So you have basically a timber frame, and the timber frame is really supporting the masonry. It's an interesting system, fairly rare, but you do see it in Wisconsin. The third part, which is what we see all over the place, is masonry veneer. Old farmhouses from the 1890s, the commercial buildings downtown, in our farm towns and our cities that have survived since the 1890s. These are basically wood frame buildings, and they have a veneer one brick thick around the exterior of it.
Okay.
And all masonry really falls into those three categories. It's the veneer that gets complicated.
Yeah.
Because we had stone veneers, which we often see. We have brick veneers, probably the most common. And then we have modern stuff, thin stuff. We have tile. We have sawn stone. We have manufactured stone. We have all kinds of stuff we glue on the outside of our houses now that we call masonry. And when we get into the veneers, this is where we're finding a lot of problems.
And what kinds of problems do we find? Leaking or what's the...
We're finding a lot of leaking, Larry, exactly, because what we're finding is that we don't have trained masons anymore. They seem to have all become superannuated. I think they must be out there playing golf or something. At least I hope they are. And we do not seem to be training masons anymore. So what we're finding is that when we inspect new homes and homes that are put up in the last decade or so, they don't even meet the minimum standards of the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code. The big problem is that the walls leak. Now, you would start to think stone wall, brick wall, water's not going to go through that. Well, you wouldn't believe the water that can go through a wall. Now, the old walls, these big mass walls, would sort of hold the water inside, and then the sunlight and the heat from outside, they would slowly dry, slowly wet, and they didn't get damaged. But when you get a veneer wall and that water sits inside and moves into the framing because of defects in the water-resistant barrier, we end up with rotting houses.
Oh boy. And we have a few of them out there.
We have a lot of them. We're very busy with litigation, and we're very busy with buildings that home inspectors have looked at and said, this masonry is simply not working.
So good masons are hard to find out there then.
Good masons are very hard to find, and I really suggest, Larry, to anyone who purchases a house, including a brand new house, that they do hire a Wisconsin registered home inspector and look for a home inspector that's also a member of a professional association like the American Society of Home Inspectors, the National Association of Home Inspectors. There's actually about five societies, and those are the two largest. And if you're looking at a brick veneer house, ask that home inspector, how much do you know about masonry? Mm-hmm. We frequently get referrals from home inspectors who say, you know, they asked me this question, we don't know, and we're sending them to you because we know that you do a lot of specialized work in masonry. Most home inspectors are very honest, And the very honest ones, if they don't know it, are going to refer you to somebody who does.
You know, there's also problems that are created even if you have excellent masonry veneer put on a building. I've got an example in mind where the owner had this beautiful house, stone veneer, built in the 40s. And there was a porch underneath, an open porch underneath one of the areas. What she had done is sometime in the 60s, they put a enclosed room. So they turned that porch into an enclosed room. And when they did, there was no way to flash it properly so that moisture didn't was able to move away from the building. So what happened was only in certain rain conditions, like northeastern rains, the siding would become saturated. It would leak through the roof into the new addition and come out. And there's really nothing that could be done other short of taking that off, flashing it, starting over and flashing it. But the masonry itself was a beautiful, beautiful job. So contractors, without knowing what they're doing, can remodel into a beautiful project some problems that didn't
very
exist.
True.
Well, we have a lot of callers online with questions for you, too. So let's take some phones. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, Fitchburg, and Don in Holman up first. Hi, Don. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have a house that was built by Sven in 1905. it has an anti-M entrance to the basement. You know, the storm door?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The walls in that stairway are beginning to crack.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what I can do.
Okay. Well, John, what about it?
Well, frequently a house built in 1905, it has a stone foundation. It might be 2 feet thick. But that little basement entrance is often only a foot thick. So the soil pressure started pushing on that, and they just aren't strong enough. Now, if it is still standing upright, you can go ahead and point the cracks. But if it was built in 1905, you need to use a lime-based mortar, not a hard Portland mortar. Because if you use a hard Portland mortar on old soft stone with old soft mortar, it'll actually act like a wedge and split that wall worse.
Okay. This has been replaced. The block has been replaced since it was built.
Is it concrete masonry block?
Yes.
And the problem with block is that unless you put some reinforcement in it. Now, Dan, is this wall still relatively straight?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Good. Then we can fix it. What we can do is we can take some number 4 steel rebar and drop 2 of them into every other hole or every third hole and then fill those holes with concrete. And what you're going to have then is you're going to have a reinforced concrete masonry unit wall. This will help it from cracking. It'll help it from bowing. Now, it's not going to help it from tipping over. So you've got to make sure that it is doweled into the house so that it is stable, so that it can't rotate as a mass. But you can make that into a nice, strong wall. Now, if you want to find out exactly how to do it, you can actually go online to the state of Wisconsin and look at the Wisconsin Administrative Code, the Uniform Dwelling Code, which is SPS, Sam Paul Sam, 321, and you can look at exactly how to build a reinforced concrete masonry unit wall as designed by the engineers for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, there you go.
That sounds terrific. And how do I keep the stone wall in the basement from flaking off?
You move it, the whole thing, to Arizona. Basically, that's moisture coming through, and you're always going to have that. If the joints erode, then use a lime-type mortar, and you can always email me for that recipe if you want at frei@chorus.net. I will send you a recipe for a very easy-to-use soft mortar that a homeowner can use to repair their own stone basement masonry.
All right, and we probably have your address posted up on my Facebook page. If we don't, Judith will put it up there for us. Don, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Neil in Madison. Hi, Neil.
Hi there. I got a 50s ranch with a pretty large chimney with a couple of flues in it. It's maybe 3x7 or so. And it's made of brick, and it comes right up from the floor of the building. And it has some cracks in the top of it, that's in the cap that's made of cement around the flues, but I've kind of caulked those with some caulk that appears to be holding, and the flashing appears to be good. But in the plaster adjacent, inside the house, in the rooms that are adjacent to it, there's some slight bubbling of the paint. And the preliminary research I did online suggests that you have to seal the bricks themselves, that even if you don't have water leakage through cracks or flashing, that, that there's moisture penetration with these kind of masonry chimneys over time, and that would produce the bubbling that I'm seeing and the moisture that's coming through the walls on the inside. You know, is that the case, or what would you recommend?
Ken Adams, go ahead.
Yeah, Neil, to start with, most flashing or most chimney leaks occur because a roof was re-roofed and the chimney flashing or the counter flashing, one of the two pieces, wasn't done correctly. That's probably, I'd say, 80% of the problems we see with leaking chimneys. So I would start by looking at that very closely, preferably with a professional, somebody that knows how to flash the chimney, how to let in there's a metal flashing that they call a counter flashing that is actually cut into the brick. Excuse me. And then and just inspect that closely. This is a pretty big chimney, and is it side to side 7 feet, or is it up and down, perpendicular to the pitch of the roof 7 feet?
Perpendicular.
Okay, so you only have 3 feet to the weather, or 3 feet to the pitch of the roof. That's good, because if it was wider, I would say that you'd need what's called a saddle in there, which is like a mini roof built behind it to move water away. The other thing is, if you've got a cracked a cap, you may be better off replacing that cap rather than trying to caulk it, because you could do an excellent job and have a pinhole, and that will be enough to cause a leak. The other thing is that there are chimney caps that are on, and sometimes those aren't put in correctly, and they will actually direct water into areas that will eventually show cracks into the ceiling. So I would look at those things before worrying too much about sealing. You seal the chimney, you can consider that. That's not going to hurt anything. My experience, though, is that most of the problems that you see with brick chimneys fall into those former categories.
There you go. You want to add something to that, John?
Well, I think the cap, as you point out, Ken, is often the second source if it isn't the flashing. And one thing Neil needs to look at is the cap really needs to overhang the brick.
Very
and the cap
point.
Should also have a drip kerf underneath it, because we don't want that water running down the brick.
Mm-hmm.
It's really inexpensive, relatively, to replace caps, because almost every chimney sweep does it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you can do is, if you do put on a new concrete cap, is you can actually put a waterproof barrier over the brick, and that may help a lot as well. Sealing the brick is probably the last thing that I would do, because I think Ken's right. It's number one, it's the flashing. Number two, it's the cap. Number three, if it's really old, soft brick, it could be taking on water. But if it was taking on that much water, you would see damage to the surface of the brick, because every time it froze in the fall, that brick would break. So if your brick is not breaking up, I think Ken's right. It's the flashing or the cap.
Mm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. Our guests today, as we talk with them about home maintenance and repair, zeroed in a little on masonry and stonework, but take any of your home repair questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting with Ken Adams and John Freiberger about home maintenance and repair. And a Facebook question from Leslie, who says, I have an 1888 home with a stone foundation. The mortar's been falling away in some areas. I've been repairing the foundation with mortar from Mortar Technologies, and it's type S. The problem is, in less than a year, my new mortar cracks and breaks off. am I using the wrong type of material, or am I using it incorrectly? What do you think, John?
Well, that's hard to tell. If you one thing you have to do with old stone is the stone has to be somewhat damp to be able to use a mortar. And if you're not misting the stone, what can happen is that the water will be absorbed out of the mortar very quickly. The mortar will shrink more than it really should. So you really need to read a little bit about the application of historic mortars. The reason I like the lime mortar that I use is that you can mix quite a bit of water with it, and it tends to cure and set very well without shrinkage. I seem to find on stone that the harder the mortar is, and type S can be relatively hard compared to the stuff I design, which is about 800-pound mortar, I would think that a lighter, softer mortar is probably going to work better for her.
Let's turn to Ron in Wamondi. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
It's Wamondi, yes. Say, seeing as you're talking about bricks here, I have about a 100-year-old farmhouse, and it's really in pretty good condition, a red brick house. My question is cleaning the bricks. Does a power washer do anything? Is it good, bad? And when does, like, sandblasting come into the equation?
Sandblasting is good if you want to demolish the house. Other than that...
Okay, there's no reason then.
I wouldn't clean it. I would simply leave it alone. The problem with power washing is you are going to force water into the walls.
Okay.
You have a house that hopefully has one or two layers of the old 15-pound felt, which is the great old stuff made out of rags and paper and with a lot of asphalt in it. If you subject, if you end up blowing a hole in a brick and subject that felt to some water pressure or flood it badly, you could have some damage.
Okay.
I would maybe do a little bit of hand brushing if you've got an area with a lot of, say, lichen or something on the north side. But generally, this is the patina of age, and I would pretty much leave it. Your brick hopefully is a fairly hard brick, but it's possible if you're in a rural area that you have an old wood-fired kiln that brick came out of. And some of that brick is tremendously soft, and any damage to the outside of the surface from abrasion or even pressure washing can really cause that brick to start to deteriorate because the inside of that brick is highly permeable. It's basically a clay sponge.
Okay.
So if you just a quick question for you, John. What I've done in the past is used a soft bristled brush with a garden hose and maybe a little bit of mild detergent. Sometimes just to get rid of spider webs and that kind of cleaning. Is that something that you would recommend?
Yeah, that makes sense because the way that brick walls leak is usually there's some sort of there's a couple ways they leak. One is capillary action,
yeah.
But if you're just hosing it for half an hour and then it's done, it's going to dry. The second is basically when wind is pushing the water, and pressure washing is water being pushed by wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's when the walls really
leak. Sometimes in excess of 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, you can go online and see a lot of videos of people testing walls with like a 20-mile-an-hour wind, and you'll see the walls begin to leak within 30 seconds. So hitting with a pressure washer really scares me.
Yeah.
The other thing is if you have this old soft mortar, the pressure washing can actually damage the mortar.
But just a garden hose, knocking dust down kind of stuff, that's not going to hurt anything.
No.
That's right. You're just having sheet flow down the surface, and you're not what you have is a light rainstorm that you're producing artificially.
And be aware, be cognizant of what the transitions are between the windows, the soffit, and the brick to make sure that you're not causing a problem at any wood framing.
Yep, there you go. Good luck. Thank you very much, Ron, for calling. Sarah in West Bend, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I fortunately had a difficult time putting a picture on for you to see my driveway, but we have a 20-year-old home. We've lived here 5 years. 10 months after we bought our home, we noticed, that's when we had the record rainfall, in our southwest corner of our home, which is nearest the lake that we live by, too, collapsed, and I literally could see the trees through my foundation, and it was a lawsuit, and we had to have the entire corner of that home dug up and piers hydraulically lifting the home and pushed down to bedrock to create the new foundation. It was $30,000, and
I'm so sorry.
Now, that's... my concern is on the adjacent corner is our driveway of the home, in which we have a patio that my husband had done. It's very well made and done, but we saw a lot of settling between the driveway and the patio stones this last winter, and the concrete has really settled and cracked on the adjacent corner. And we're finishing our basement. We had a plumber install a crock in the basement in the same corner where the driveway is, and we know the drain tile is completely clogged.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if the settlement issues that I'm noticing now in the driveway, there's large cracks, there's large gaps in between the concrete platforms, and, you know, if I were to walk across certain areas of that concrete, like with my high heels on, I can hear, like, it almost sounds hollow underneath
yeah.
it.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if we need to have somebody come out and look at the driveway in that corner of the home, what your advice would be.
Well, I'll just start. It sounds like you've got a couple of different problems going on, but they're all generally related. Did you have a structural engineer review
yeah.
the work in that southwest corner?
Yes.
You did. Did he or she look around the entire house to see what the other issue, what other potential issues you have to deal with?
Good. Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask what the result of that was.
At that time when we lived here, there was a concrete patio in which there was a lot of cracking on the patio. The pitch was incorrectly coming into the home.
Sure.
Dug all of that up, and that's when my husband put in the paver patio. That's been there for 5 years, and we increased the pitch. We totally redid all the landscaping and patio work and stonework except for the driveway. All around the home, they increased the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But the drain tile was a question, because obviously without destroying the basement floor, to look at that, you really couldn't tell.
Right. Well, and I assume that the bottom of your foundation is probably at or very close to or maybe even below the water level?
They believed in the structural engineer report when we had the record rainfall that the groundwater table rose very quickly, pushing mm-hmm. It was almost like a silt through the drain tile, and then the corner of the home is where our septic pump was that collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So
a lot of water was congregating in there.
Yeah.
So you've got that corner issue dealt with, and but you don't have a drain tile that's functional. You don't have a driveway that's appropriately pitched because it heaved on you either over the winter or during the spring rains or something like that. Is that
right.
correct?
Yep.
And then are you worried about other walls in your house?
We don't see any cracks anywhere else
okay.
in the basement,
mm-hmm.
But we did just finish it because, you know, it's been 5 years. We haven't had any problems.
Sure.
We have documented everything. We certainly are not trying to hide anything at all, but when we noticed we were putting in the crock and the plumbing in the basement, that's when the plumber was like, take a look at this.
Right. Well, I'll start this by saying that one of the things you can do, and Larry's done this on his previous house, was have a drain tile actually cut in around the perimeter of the interior of the basement, running to a new sump pit. That should be in a silt sock, so that you can keep it clean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of any way to clean out what you have there because you may not have a silt sock over the top. Back when your house was built, you say it was like a little over 20 years old.
Yeah.
They may not have required a silt sock over the top. Since then, that's changed. But you see the result of not having the fabric over the top of the holes.
Right.
It just fills with crud. So you could do what Larry did, and that was very successful to him for his water issues. I would do that. I would have an engineer or a contractor that understands this kind of work look at that basement before you do any further remodeling, because you might end up tearing stuff out to redo it.
What about the driveway?
Yeah, that's another thing. That could be groundwater that's pushing the subsurface away. They may. It's not unlikely that they didn't do a superior job of getting the base down, and that would be gravel or stone or pea gravel or sand, or that the groundwater washed that away and you have hollow spots. And then when the ground freezes and thaws, or when you get excess groundwater, that'll move around quite a bit. And often they crack. Sometimes they all move around. If they're thick, they sometimes move around as a slab. You can do a couple different things. If it's in good shape, you can do what's called mud jacking. And that's, they drill small, like 2-inch holes, and then they pump mud, or they call it mud, but it's actually a sand silt kind of a material. And they, you can actually adjust the height of them. If they're, if it's too far gone, you might have to redo the whole thing. Sorry about that.
Yeah, good,
good luck.
To you. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Rick in Appleton has a question for you guys. Rick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I just recently bought an 18-year-old home, and I have a lot of spalling on the on certain sections of the driveway. Wondering if you can give me any encouragement about new technology or concrete products to resurface that.
I don't know of anything that, that really works long-term, Rick. There are latex-based and epoxy bases that you may try. I would suspect if it's spalling a lot that what happened is that it probably set up too quickly, or it was overworked, it was a warm day, they maybe didn't use a curing compound, and basically the driveway surface is pretty weak. You could try a sealer on it. Meadows makes Volcomp, which is very easy to apply. You can certainly apply it yourself. Maybe start with a sealer and go a year and see what happens, or seal half of it and don't seal half of it and see if that helps. If you can keep it together by a yearly application of an acrylic-based sealer, I think that's probably going to work better for you. I'm afraid that what is going to happen is if you apply a latex or an epoxy, that things are simply going to pop off.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you, Rick, for calling. Diane emailed us and says we need to re-roof our roof. It's a lot of strange angles and dormers. Parts of the roof and attic are not insulated. After we strip the shingles, what would be your suggestion for insulation of these strange parts? We were thinking of two layers of the insulation product in order for it to not get the ice dam in the areas that are difficult. John Freiberger, what do you think?
Well, it's always good to start with an energy audit. Ken and I are always saying go to Focus on Energy and get an energy audit. The nice thing about tearing off the shingles is it's going to give you access to places that you otherwise can't access. So you need to talk to an energy auditor and somebody that also does urethane foam and other insulation and see what they can do from the top. So if you've got an area that maybe only has 6 inches of interstitial places between the plaster and the roof in between the rafters, maybe that can have 4.5 inches of urethane foam put in it, which is going to give you about, by the time you look at the whole assembly, about R38. So talk to two professionals, an energy analyst and a really good insulation contractor, and see what makes sense. The other thing to take a look at is your ventilation. And I believe Larry probably has up on his webpage, coravent.com, C-O-R-A-vent.com. Tells you a great deal about insulation, gives you little worksheets you can work from, etc. So any insulation contractor should know about good ventilation, because to get rid of ice dams, you need to do two things. First, limit the heat loss. Secondly, remove that heat that does escape through the resistant barrier.
There we go. Caller Patty wonders if services like Angie's List is legitimate, and if so, if it's a good way to choose someone to do home repair work.
Hmm. Well, that's a good question. In some locations around the country, and I know quite a few contractors that rely on Angie's List to promote their business. Mm-hmm. Here in the area, it hasn't caught on dramatically yet. And so what you see more often than not is you see it's an avenue for someone who's unhappy. So you see probably more, not very pleasant reviews than you. Mm-hmm. So you can, I certainly wouldn't discount it completely, but keep it in a mix with other things. A personal discussion with the previous client is probably an excellent way to do it. Referrals by neighbors for someone that's worked on their house. Those are all good ways to start.
All right. Mike in Menominee Falls. Hi.
Hello. I have a crawl space in our house down in the basement. It's approximately 17.5 feet by 10.5 feet. And I want to did have some storage there before a while back. And they had some wood planking in there that all deteriorated from the dampness and all that. If I put a vapor barrier under that sand, in that crawl space, and then throw some treated plywood on top of that, and then maybe vinyl flooring on top, and then use for storage, would that be all right as far as the dampness and all that? Well, it's underneath our family room. So there's a ductwork and a vent there.
Good. The vent helps because that's going to circulate air, but we do need to stop the water vapor and perhaps also the radon and other things from coming out of the soil. Mm-hmm. And certainly a plastic barrier is going to help you quite a bit. I would get as thick a plastic as you can get, 6 mil absolute minimum. Try to get 8 mil because remember, once you lay things down on it, you may penetrate it. Now, it sounds like you're going to put some sand under it and some sand over it, and that sounds like a good idea.
Well, the soil is underneath there. It is mostly, it's that reddish sand.
Is reddish sand, okay.
Yeah, and little stones and gravel and stuff like that there.
Now, remember that you want to seal this plastic anytime there's an overlap, and you also want to seal it at the walls so that nothing can really come through it. I would not put vinyl flooring down there because vinyl flooring can be a base for growing mold. So I would find something else to use down there other than vinyl flooring.
But the treated plywood.
The problem with the treated plywood are the chemicals in it. And, we know that the old copper arsenate treatment really did a lot of damage to a lot of different membranes. I'm not sure. Maybe, Ken, do you know how much problems we're having with new treated wood?
Well, I mean, unless he's got a lot of moisture down there, I don't see that as being a real issue. I would say if one of the things that I would recommend in a place like that would be instead of a solid plywood floor over sleepers is I might put sleepers down and have the floor be possibly non-treated lumber, maybe cedar, something that can handle moist, dark conditions and leave, not try to seal it up so that it completely traps air between the bottom of the floor and the top of the plastic.
There's another product that Ken and I have used. The generic name for it is PlayGuard. It used to be Dodge Rugapole Company, and they've changed their name to Echo something or other. But they make recycled plastic mats, and they are not terribly expensive. This is something that is very inert. We use them outside on patios.
And roof decks.
So it's very moist. So if you Google PlayGuard, you will probably find the name of this company and can take a look at it. I know that there are several distributors of it in the Midwest, and I think Ken and I have used it for 15 and 20 years on projects.
Yeah, that's a great idea, John. One of the nice things about it is it's not abrasive. It's soft and, it's a rubbery feeling. So it's got a nice soft feel when you're walking around on it. It's not going to puncture the floor below it. That's why it's popular on roofs.
And no splinters in your knees.
Yeah, another good thing. There you go.
It come in a roll or is it just squares?
I believe it comes in squares, but they make different size sheets. If you've ever been to a health club and you've seen the rubber matting on the floor, it's very similar to that.
Mm-hmm. And they're usually 2-foot by 2-foot square with a little puck that locks them in together.
Right,
so.
A snap together, which you may not need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thanks, Mike. And Judy in Lodi. Hello.
Hi, Larry, and your guest. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've seen that I call a lot. Anyways, I live in an apartment building, and I've got water leaking in the living room, and the ceiling is buckled. And it's been an ongoing situation with the management for 8 months, almost a year now. And they keep putting it off and putting it off. Every time it rains, it gets worse. And they're trying to figure out where the water's coming from. And I don't know what to do about it because it's starting to mold. And I've got really bad allergies. I've got glaucoma, which is really not good with mold.
No.
Mm-mm. And I'm just wondering if your guests would know of something that they can do to fix the problem because it's getting really, really bad. The streaks are about, they're from the ceiling to the floor, and then they're wide-wise, they're spaced, like where your studs are.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do anymore. I mean, I've called them and called them and called them until I'm starting to turn green instead of blue in the face.
Well, we'll help you turn your color back to a healthy color. Go ahead, John.
I think the first thing to do, Judy, is to stop down at the town hall there in Lodi, the city hall, and talk to the building inspection department. Now, they may or may not have what's called a minimum housing conditions ordinance. Madison has a very good one. I think it's called Chapter 10. And it basically, what it lays out is, what is it reasonable for a tenant to expect from the landlord? It sounds like, and Ken's nodding his head, that what your experience is simply not reasonable. This, you're correct. This can be a threat to your health. The city may have to write work orders, and hopefully the city would write a work order saying that they have to take out a building permit, this has to be repaired and has to be inspected by the city or village of Lodi within 30 days. So start out there. It's sort of being a bad guy to turn on the management, but you do have a right to a good habitable space. The other thing that many cities have, if it's not fully habitable, you don't have to pay all your rent. Madison has a rent abatement ordinance, and you may find that Lodi is all set up to manage this. It is a nice small town that's well managed, and I think you will probably find someone to help you if you stop down at City Hall.
Yeah.
Usually you have to stop in early in the morning, so call the day before and find out what time the building inspection department people are there, because they're out a lot, because their job is to look at things. And then I would try to set up an appointment and meet with them personally and bring along some pictures and say, here's the problem, can you help me?
Yeah. See, the problem is with me, I've got also, with my legs, I've got permanent nerve damage. So I'm unable to walk very far.
Judy, you could do this by phone if you want. You could call the inspection department up and ask for somebody to come over and talk to you personally, explain to them what you have. Just like you explained to John and I, and you know, that would be a great first step.
Yeah, absolutely. Then they could come over and actually see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's gotten really, I mean, the
really bad.
Is
yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, good luck. Thanks.
Good luck. Thank you very much. And why don't you pick up the phone now that you've hung up? Pick up the phone and maybe call the city right now, or look up the number and let's get this taken care of. Bernadette in Milwaukee up next with a question. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi, how are you? And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two questions. One, I have a land and stone home, one of those beautiful homes. The way the roof is peaked in the front, there's a like pitch. And so when it rains, this over the years, I have like a streak going down the land and stone. I'm wondering how to fix it. I had thought of having somebody come and blast it, but then I overheard you talking about how that's not good. So I'm wondering, I was thinking, and I've done this in small areas, just scrubbing it with a scrub brush and a bleach water. Is that going to hurt my stone?
The bleach water, if you have swell enough diluted, shouldn't do too much damage. The land and stone is a calcium carbonate binder, so anything that's acidic is going to damage it slightly. The first thing that you need to do is you need to control that water, because if we have enough water running over that stone to discolor it, that could mean that that stone is getting wet, and we could eventually damage the interior of your wall. So you may have to talk to a roofing or a gutter contractor. You may need a deflector, you may need a larger gutter, you may need a larger downspout, but let's stop that water first. And then, as Ken talked earlier, let's start with maybe some Dawn dish soap and a mild brush and do a little scrubbing with that before we go to chemicals where we really don't want to breathe the fumes. Yep. Ken, anything to add to that?
No, I've had some good luck with really mild citric acid you could buy for like spritzing your walls and your kitchen and stuff, because it's mild enough to not cause a lot of damage, but strong enough to usually, to work at it a little bit, to give you a little muscle. But I think Dawn is probably a great first step, you know.
Yeah.
Second question has to do with a problem I've had with a porch. I had a porch completely redone. They did a phenomenal job, so well that two neighbors came and asked them to do theirs.
Great.
But the next spring, I noticed a rust spot. I called the contractor back, and he said, oh, the frame was too close to the surface. I'll fix it. That was in 2009, and I keep calling and calling and calling. Finally, with the kind of winter we had this year, a hole formed in the concrete, so about a penny-sized hole. And I said, well, this is really bad. And after some delay, they did come and fixed it. When they came, they actually cut out a piece of the concrete, and we did concrete again right in that rectangular spot. It poured that next day. We, the kind of spring we've had where you had pelting rain.
Yeah.
I was gone when it happened. I came in, and I called him immediately. The contractor was, for some reason, he was so angry because of the rain all this season. He was extremely verbally abusive, and, I didn't know what to do. My problem is now I have this rectangular spot that is, the surface is not smooth. In fact, it looks like, I don't know, almost like cake batter that didn't rise. And over the years, what's going to happen is people are going to fall on this.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Well, this sounds like it's on the horizontal surface. I'm understanding that to be the horizontal surface. That has to be taken care of. And it sounds like what happened was he poured concrete. It wasn't protected, and before it cured, it was washed partially out of the opening. Does that sound like
that's what it sounds like?
Sounds like it.
So I'm just wondering if the best thing to do is to get, if you can't get that contractor back, do what we recommended to the woman in Lodi, and that's call the inspection department, ask them to take a look at it, and they may put a little bit of pressure on him to do it. My feeling is that any contractor worth his salt is going to want to keep you happy. So I would try him again and go from there.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guests today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net as we talk today with Ken Adams and John Freiberger about your home maintenance and repair on our minds today. Great to have them with us, and thank you for joining us. Call us at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Pat in East Troy, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello. Oh, I'm so glad you're on today. I have a contractor who's going to give me an estimate on repairing one of my four brick gate posts. And I don't know if he's the expert I think I should have. They were built in 1938, and my father built them himself. He was an engineer, but he said it was the hardest job he ever had to do, figuring out the variations that have to be accommodated. Anyway, one of the gate posts is so bad that I don't think it will make it through another year without just falling down of its own weight and deterioration. I believe that it'll have to be taken down to the base and started over. It's made of Chicago brick, I've been told, and it has a roof on top of it with some sort of tile covering the wood roof. But the part that I'm concerned about is the brick. Do you think that, first, what should I be asking to find out if this person is competent to do the job? And after that, what do I tell him I want done about replacing the mortar and everything that needs to be done?
Well, the good news is if these are Chicago Commons, also known as Illinois Brick Company bricks, you can get lots and lots of salvage bricks. That's one of the most popular bricks out there. I always seem to have a stack of them in my backyard. I love them. I use them for all kinds of things. You do want to use a relatively soft mortar with them because they are relatively soft brick. I think their compression strength is about 1,000, and they're pretty permeable. So a mortar that has a high lime content, probably 2/3 lime to 1/3 cement, would be best. We don't want a real hard Portland there. The wood roof is a wonderful thing because this brick does absorb moisture, and that wood roof is certainly keeping part of it dry. I would ask a few questions, ask him what mortar he intends to use, what kind of specifications that he has. Ask him to prepare a specification for you as far as how he's going to lay it up, etc. And, of course, as Ken always says, go check with a couple people that he's worked for. Go take a look at his work and see how good it is. Is this a historic property, Pat?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going to be getting historic tax credits from the state for the restoration?
I don't know. Is that a possibility?
Well, it is a possibility.
It's not on anybody's list, but it's been in the family since 1888.
Well, you could perhaps put it on list. I always encourage people who own older homes that may be historic or homes in a historic neighborhood to go to the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. When you get there, click on Historic Homeowner Tax Credit, because it is possible that the state of Wisconsin will give you a 25% tax credit for the work that you're going to be performing there. So take a look at that. If it isn't on the register but could be put on the register, it isn't terribly onerous to do that. If it is going on the register, then you can access, in fact, you have to use, the Department of Interior Standards for Historic Buildings. And you should be able to go to the U.S. Department of Interior Historic Buildings and actually download at least 2, if not 3, articles on historic masonry.
Hmm.
There you go.
Well, that sounds like a direction I hadn't even considered.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a good one to me, Pat, so good luck. And thank you very much for calling. Good luck with that project. Bob in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks to your experts for showing up again to help bail us out. We've got a question with attic ventilation, and in that regard, we've hired a contractor to install a ridge vent on the house for us, and also on the two-car garage, which is terribly hot. But I'm concerned about the airflow in the attic. Specifically, we've got blown-in insulation, and I have reason to believe that there is insulation on the top side of the relatively new soffit vent panels.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, to rip that out would involve practically redoing it, and that's not inexpensive work. So my question is there, and our roof slope is pretty shallow. I can't give you the exact number on it, but I've tried crawling out on boards to get a look at the soffit area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to crawl out there and see what's going on. Is there a way to install those end of rafter baffles, you know, not the baffles that go between the joists going up to the top of the roof, but those end of rafter baffles that you guys have talked about that prevent insulation from falling down on top of the soffits? Is there a way to install those in the attic without having to rip out the aluminum soffit panels?
Well, no, not on a shallow pitch like that, unless you're re-roofing the house and you have the ability to go in from the top. The good news is aluminum soffit vents, aluminum soffit material that has vents in them, are fairly easy to remove and replace. So you could take one panel off, see if there's insulation blowing up into it, see if the contractor that built it actually did a good job of sealing up that end of the top of the wall, is basically between the top of the wall and the bottom of the vent, the proper vent that goes up. So it shouldn't be too hard for anybody with some, you know, with a little know-how and the right tools to be able to get there. Is it two story or one story?
It's a ranch home, and the firm that redid the they redid the old wood soffits with aluminum soffit.
Mm-hmm.
And I am aware that because I saw them doing it, that they cut away the old solid wood soffits.
Yeah, that's not unusual. So
to create holes, and I know they did that, but I'm wondering if I should maybe hire the same firm or a firm that does this the new aluminum soffit work to take out the soffit panels for us.
At least take one out and inspect it, and then you'll know for sure what you have to do.
Okay.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. We have Larry in Eau Claire. Do you have a quick question?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Going back to driveways. I have an asphalt that's over 30 years old. It's been breaking up, you know, from the frost. It's time to replace it. I don't want to go back to asphalt. I don't want concrete because the neighbor, he just put in a new concrete a couple years ago, and that's breaking up. I'm thinking of a crushed material. I don't know. I don't know what's out there, but something smooth enough that I can use a snowblower.
Crushed granite can make a really nice driveway, but there's always a problem when you use a crushed material, even with the gravel, when you're using a snowblower. You end up spending a lot of time picking it off of the lawn. Maybe take a look at some of the pavers that are available, including some of the permeable pavers. Maybe that would be affordable for you. The nice thing about it, if they ever settle, you just pick them up, put a little more sand underneath, and set them back again. So do a little bit of a look online and see what's out there.
There you go. Thanks very much for calling. Ken Adams and John Freiberger, our guests today, and they're going to be with us right up until 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with the two guys. Stay with us. Taking a look at home maintenance and repair with a couple of great guys, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Great to have you with us, Ken. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
And also John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. And John, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. We have links to these guys, their websites and so forth, on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So certainly you can go there and take a look. We have callers online, but there's an open line for you perhaps yet at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a comment, or even a photo there. And I think we may even have a photo that we'll be looking at in a bit. Right now, let's go to Marion in Madison, who has a question. Hi, Marion.
Oh, good morning. I have a cement block detached garage with a drainage problem. The ground is low next to the building, so water gets in. I talked to two contractors, and one had an idea of putting tar on the cement block, which is painted cement block, and then building it up with dirt, quite a bit of dirt. And then a different one suggested building a swale with gravel or stone. We have I'm not sure what his material was exactly, but we have a distance of about 6 feet between the side of the garage and a fence. So that's where the swale would have to be. And the swale would be out of view of the house, so it wouldn't really look too bad. But then, and that way we wouldn't have to put tar on the cement block. But then there's so much leaf debris. So I'd always be raking that out, and in the spring you get those, the seeds, and before that the flowers of the trees. I'd almost have to cover the gravel with some kind of material in the spring that the water would go through but would hold up, you know, keep all those blossoms out of the gravel.
Mm-hmm.
I seems like I liked... The contractor who came up with the gravel swale idea seemed like he knew what he was doing quite a bit, and I liked liked him, but I'm not sure. Both of these have their drawbacks. And I wasn't sure if the tar would really, if we went that route, if the tar would really stay on the brick. I mean, it is painted brick. And how long would that hold up?
Yeah.
You, when you say brick,
it's cement block. Cement block from the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's in good shape as far as I can tell. The building's a good building.
Okay. And is the building completely made out of cement block, all the walls?
The walls are all cement block.
And moisture's coming through and running into your garage floor.
Yeah. It's pretty clear. I have gutters up, and that actually did not do anything to put the gutters up. But, you can clearly see that the water goes, or that the ground slopes toward the building on the sides. And then there's also a problem in the front where there's some paving stones, and those actually slope toward the buildings. But that's a different issue.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have to do something there, too.
Yeah, you'll probably want to address that as well.
Yeah.
Typically, it sounds to me like that the swale idea might be the direction you want to go.
Yeah.
Putting tar on the walls and all that stuff isn't going to resolve the problem. It's just trying to put a Band-Aid over it. Yeah. Thanks, Larry.
The thing with the tar was that was going to protect the cement block from the dirt, because you were going to then pile dirt against it, and then you would no longer have the slope toward the building.
Yeah, well, but you're also raising the dirt level against the garage.
Right.
And what you'd like to do is leave that garage level there, or maybe slightly lower, have the ground slope away from the building, and then you can raise it up so you've got this, is it a swale, a reverse swale? What is it called, John? It's
a swale.
A swale, okay. Mm-hmm. So you have this, because I was thinking of a berm, yeah. No, you want to, you do want that swale. I think that's really
a
key.
Idea.
Yeah, but you also need to take care of the front, your pavers in the front, because you don't want to resolve it on three sides and still have a problem.
Yeah, I just didn't know, this was where I was stuck with what to do with the sides. Mm-hmm. The front is, so the swale, well, we have 6 feet, and so what do they have enough room there to build an adequate swale?
Well, that's minimal, but it should, I mean, how big is your garage?
The garage is small. It's like a one-car garage.
You should probably be fine with that. The other thing you can do is if you've got a little bit extra money to invest, is you could put a grid drain tile around in a sock, and that will help. It might help, especially in the front. I don't know if you've got water running towards the...
Yeah, we do. We have both those things. Well, we've had so much rain.
Okay, is the garage lower than the driveway?
It's lower than the yard. It only has... It has grass in front of it. I'm calling it a garage because it looks like a garage, but it's actually really in the back of the lot where it was put there for gardening, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, John had just kind of mouthed the words to me about a rain garden.
Yeah.
So you could consider a rain garden as part of that. And so the swale idea is a good place to start.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you, Marion, for calling. Appreciate it. Bob in McQuantico will give you a chance. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I had a question about foundations, specifically bracing foundations. I've done some research online just looking at different things, just out of curiosity, and I've seen some products that make me, kind of think in terms of whether they work or not, and I just want some professional opinions on them. I know around this area, generally, it is the piers that the I-beams get set up, and that braces a wall that's maybe not quite in line.
Hey, say, Bob, can I interrupt you for a second? What's the problem that you're having with a foundation that you're considering bracing?
My wife and I are looking at some houses, and one of the houses has a lateral crack, and it's on the edge of whether or not it would need addressing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fairly extensive crack that goes, pretty much the length of the wall, but it doesn't seem to be, it seems slightly out of alignment. But before we get, any engineers in there, I'm trying to gauge what, what cost is going to be, that sort of thing. I've seen the helical piers that they could put in, but there's also these products, carbon something or other, that they basically glue to the wall. And there's both a professional version, and then there's a type of carbon slat that you glue yourself to the wall, and that's supposedly going to brace the wall from the exterior pressure pushing the wall out of alignment.
I would be very cautious about any do-it-yourself project with something like this. If you're thinking about buying a house that has an issue like a seriously cracked foundation wall, I would work into the purchase agreement that you're going to have some engineering work done on it by a professional engineer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of little litmus tests I have on this. First of all, how big's the crack? Can you stick your finger in the hole or your pinky?
No.
Secondly, okay, that's good. Secondly, when you run your hand across the crack, is there a difference in elevation between the two sides?
No, it doesn't seem so. It's just when I did the walkthrough on it, I put a level on it, and there seems to be a little deflection between, you know, the top and bottom and the middle of the wall.
Uh-huh.
So I know there's somewhere in the neighborhood of a half-inch deflection that's, you know,
oh, half inch
within
that's
range.
Yeah, but that could have been, I mean, that could be a problem, or it could have been poured in. It's hard to say at this point without having, you know, a chance to really analyze it. I would have in your offer to have a professional look at it, and it may cost you, what do you think, John, a couple hundred bucks to have a professional engineer?
I would think a couple hundred, yes.
Yeah, and it would be money worth spending, because a project like this may cost, you know, $100 to fix, or it may cost $25,000-$30,000 to fix.
Yeah. So you definitely want to have that covered.
So that $200 is a good investment.
Good luck with that, Bob. Thank you for calling. And let's turn to Linda in Duluth next. Hi, Linda.
Hi. We live in a two-story brick schoolhouse built in 1939, and some of the mortar is coming out from between the bricks, and I'm wondering how we could what would you do to repair that, if anything? And would ours qualify as a historical building?
It's possible. It is going to depend upon what kind of history you have. Now, there are a lot of old schoolhouses out in the country, but it depends a little bit upon the social history of the school and what sort of records are there. But I would start with the State Historic Society website and take a look at their standards. And then, is the building at all unusual architecturally, or is it sort of, you know, are there 10,000 of them in the state? Because one of the standards is that it's somewhat unique, and somebody may want to come and look at it and study it sometime. Now, this is probably a brick veneer, and it's very easy to tell 99% of the time whether your brick is a veneer or whether it is what we talked about earlier in the program, a mass wall. If all the bricks look like the same dimension, basically, you know, 8-inch by 2-inch, and you don't see anything that looks like half bricks coming through the wall, then you have a brick veneer. And it's very important to make sure you maintain the mortar with that brick veneer. Depending upon how hard or soft the brick is would determine the type of mortar that you need. And again, I think you can go to Department of Interior and download some information. You can talk to local masons. But if you make a mistake, err on the side of softer mortar rather than harder. But do go ahead and get it pointed.
Well, that's what the process is called.
Yeah. Pointing, yes. Mm-hmm. And there are very standard specifications for doing that. If you email me at the address us on Larry's site, I'd be very happy to send you our standard specification for the pointing of brick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that'd be great.
Certainly.
And I just wanted to ask about our chimney. It's a huge chimney, and it's never had a cap on it. Should there be one on it?
Yes, there should be a cap.
All right. Who do you think you would ask to do something like that? Like, would you have somebody come out and inspect the chimney and then?
Well, I would put this all as the chimney, I'm assuming, is a brick chimney, just like the rest of the building. Well, then whoever your mason that you select, have them form and pour a cap. And remember, the cap needs to overhang the brick, preferably by 2 inches. And it needs to have a kerf, which is a little groove, cut into the bottom side of it so that the water drips off of the cap and doesn't run down the chimney soaking into the brick.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll give you John's email address. Tom in Dodgeville, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you very much for taking my phone call. Prior to calling, I had just finished scoring a driveway slab, and I'm putting in some 4-inch drain channel with a grate over the top because, like everybody else calling, this year has created water problems.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is my house is built in 1892, and one corner, the corner where the water problem is, was built on a foundation that actually predates the house. It is aggregate, probably some type of a lime mortar mixture. And the exterior is crumbling. I'd like to stabilize the exterior. And I've got questions with regards to, there are no serious cracks in the foundation, but I want to stabilize the crumbling. And I want to know, do I need to go down 3 feet, use hydrated lime, and put a foundation in? And what advice you can give me?
Now, is this a full basement wall, Tom, or is this just sort of a crawl space frost wall?
Full basement.
Full basement. Okay, and the inside looks pretty good, and the outside looks pretty crummy.
Inside, it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we have 5 inches of rain in 24
hours, water's going to come through. Yeah, and basically, these old walls were almost built like two walls. They built an inside wall and an outside wall, and they threw all the rubble and mortar in between. So what you can have good structural performance because the inside wall is in great shape, which means you can take down part of the outside wall carefully. I always like to go down 3 feet if I can. Sometimes you find that the stone is in such bad shape that you're afraid to go down any further. Usually you can find a quarry in the area that has that same limestone. We usually call it sandstone in Wisconsin, even though it is a type of light limestone. And you should be able to get chunks of that, and using the hydrated lime mortar, maybe with one-third of the cement being a white hydraulic, a white Portland cement.
I do have some white Portland cement because occasionally I've had the tuck point.
Right. And it seems that mixture of two parts lime and one part Portland really gives you a nice, sticky, easy to work with. And remember that you're going to need to mist things so that things don't set up too quickly when you apply the mortar. But you should be able to do that work yourself. Do a little bit of downloading of instructions. Look at the Department of Interior again, and you should be able to tackle those exterior walls by yourself.
There you go.
Would you recommend any type of a tar-based, petroleum-based water sealant on the exterior of the wall before I backfill?
There's very few things a home inspector will guarantee, but I will guarantee that won't work.
Okay.
If you did want to slow down seepage through the wall, the problem with the tar-based things is that they disappear after about 6 to 10 years because the soil bacteria eat them. But use a bentonite clay waterproofing. And you can mix that up as a slurry and actually sort of plaster it on the wall. That is going to expand. And the bentonite is what we've used successfully where we've wanted to slow down the movement of moisture through an old stone wall.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Email from Susan who says we have a stucco home, not new construction type stucco. We do not know if it was ever painted. It's white now. I have it power washed a couple of times gently with wonderful results. A few cracks in the stucco filled last year, and we have no alternative but to have those walls painted. So the question is, what do you do about painting? What advice do you have about how to paint stucco? Ken, what do you think?
Well, I assume the cracks are already fixed because sometimes a good stucco a plasterer can match the colors, maybe not perfectly, but pretty close. There are several cementitious paints out there that are available for concrete and stucco work, And not one comes to mind right now, John. I can't.
Well, yes, yeah. You're right. There are several out there. It's just wonderful that this place has not been painted yet. That,
yeah.
It gives you such an advantage over people that have 12 layers of paint.
Yeah.
And there's two types of paint. So there's a silicate-type paint, which kiln would be one from Germany, though it's available in the United States. The other possibility, and I wouldn't do it unless you've got an old stucco guy, old plaster guy there, is originally these houses were always whitewashed. Basically, it was a calcium carbonate-based paint, and the wonderful thing about it is that it would actually strengthen the stucco. The kiln and the other silicate-based paints do a similar thing. They put a really good hard crust on it. I'm trying to think if Merltex is another one. I think if you go online and look at stucco coatings rather than paints, or at silicate paints, you will find several different things that can be used. I would avoid coating a stucco house that has not been painted with a latex paint, which is what we have to use in houses that have already been painted, because you can actually use your paint not just as a water barrier the way acrylic latex would, but something that would actually help consolidate and strengthen the stucco so that it lasts another 100 years.
There we go. We got Erna and Brilliant. You have a quick question for us.
Hi, my husband and his brother put siding on 12 years ago, but they didn't put anything underneath the overhang. So I asked one contractor, he said he has to take out 6 inches all the way around, or another one said he would put holes in every 2 to 3 feet. So what's the best?
It sounds to me like you're saying you're talking about ventilation in the roof?
Right.
Okay. And you have... what kind of soffit material is it? Is it wood?
Right now it's just wood. They didn't put any, I don't know what you call it when you cover the overhang.
Yeah, so it's a wood soffit. And they're talking about drilling holes every few feet.
Yeah, or all the way around the house, 6 inches all the way along for, you know, circulation problems.
Sure, but you can't just leave those holes open. You have to cover them with something.
Yeah, they're going to cover them with, what do you use? What's the best material these days?
It depends on which solution you go for. If you've got wood, the simplest thing that you can use would be either drill a circular hole and put a round aluminum vent in that could be either painted the same color as the soffit or... you don't want a complementary color, but that would be the simplest thing. The next thing would be a rectangular vent that could be used there too and screwed right over the surface of the hole. The other issue you want to be really careful of is making sure that that you have proper vents, which are these chutes that sit below the roof above the wall inside the soffit so that air can move from those vents up and out, because you could put all these holes in and there's nowhere for the air to go, so it won't do you any good. So this should be part of an overall plan for ventilation. It may be something that you'd want to bring in a qualified insulating contractor to look over the whole thing and give you the best idea.
That's probably very good advice. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Ken and John, thank you so much. Boy, the time flew.
Yeah, is it that time already?
That time. We'll have them back. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. Go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You'll find out some more about their businesses. Certainly looking forward to having them back.